And we're live.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 120 of the Fans of Power podcast. I'm Tyler Baker, and of course, with me as always, the mighty JoJo Amato.
How's it going, T-Rex?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good here. We've got some exciting things to discuss this week, as we do every week, regardless of whether it's negative or positive. But tonight should be another no different than any other episode. Just put it that way.
Yeah, like you said, a multitude of topics. And also, I just want to acknowledge we have Zentron. He said he's the first one in the chat room. So thank you for joining us, Zentron. And JSP, boom, he just popped up too. So thanks for joining us, guys. But, no, so I was trying to think of anything, you know, topical that maybe popped up. And honestly, I don't think anything really topical popped up recently that I can think of. You know, like news-wise, as for upcoming movie news or cartoon for She-Ra or anything, nothing like that. So I couldn't think of anything along those lines. I don't know about you, if you've seen or heard anything.
Not really, you know. I almost feel like we're kind of now in that gap of between now and between, or we're just pretty much waiting on San Diego.
Yeah.
It's several months away, but still, that's kind of the next big tentpole reveal event. Unless something miraculous comes up regarding, which I would rather not hear anything about a movie at this point. just be kind of like insulting. I mean, it's if it already hasn't been to fans anyway, but. I'd imagine from here on out, it would just be an absolute surprise if we got anything regarding, media or,
whatever we get, I think it'll probably just be out of nowhere. You know, like, if you noticed, we've had quite a gap since hearing about any of the upcoming She-Ra cartoon news. I have a feeling that pretty soon something might just slam everybody in the face and get some kind of news. So we'll see along that line. But like you said, we have some, discussions about a comic, something that existed in the comics that you don't hear much of anymore, and some other things too as well, of course, and you'll be showing your figures. And also I want to say hello to Mike Delaney and Christopher Dahlberg in the chat room. Thank you for joining us as well. But well, however you want to start it, if you were going to start showing what you had there before we get into all our other topics, but one topic to start off with was you were going to show your next batch of figures you got.
Yes, they came in on Monday, this past Monday, and you believe me, I could not wait to get home and crack this box open. It was, we're almost a year since we pre-ordered these figures, like last May to like early June. So to finally have these figures in hand, it's like, God almighty, it was well worth the wait. So I don't know where to start here.
I was going to say if you could. Also, I had a question about Hawk, because a couple people were showing there. Hawk was having some kind of issues with paint or something around her hips or her outfit, but maybe you hopefully have a perfect Hawk, but there's some people had quality issues with her, unfortunately. So hopefully not. Maybe it was just a few of them.
No, I really can't say that there's an issue with Hawk. There's like a slight, maybe kind of a, so maybe like a glue, piece of glue kind of stuck to her right hip. But other than that,
okay.
Let me just clear the shelf off. It just kind of, you know, I'll put everybody in place as I'm talking about them here.
Yeah, because I don't have these. And so just you showing them up in close and in person at least is giving some people an idea of what these are looking like.
Looks pretty good on camera here. But I've got her with her smokescreen gun from the episode Betrayal of Stratus, which I thought was a fantastic. I'm trying to make sure she gets set up all right here on this table here. She's not the most, I got to play around with her. So I'm just going to hold her as such here, but from, back to front, top to bottom, I mean, Hawk looks like a spitting image of how she looks in filmation, you know, the way she was supposed to look. I think she looks great. I love the character of Hawk. She's flawless. I that's the only thing I've seen people complaining about was stuff with Hawk. And I, you know, like I said, when I'm not dealing with it, I'm like, well, I'm not really going to concern myself a whole lot because I'm like, I don't see any problems with her. But I had no pain issues with her. I mean, check out the rear here. I mean, she got a fantastic buttocks, just like Tila did.
Yeah, Teal's might be a little bit better, but no, she's still got something going on there.
Got a better skin tone than Tila did. Tila's all pasty and clammy. Looks like she's been out in the sun a little bit.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, real quick, Justin Hewn in the chat room, thank you for joining us. And Cassandra Proc, thank you for joining us, Cassandra. Good to see you here.
Cool. Good turnout here so far.
And you get Dolores' head comes with Hawk as well, correct?
Yeah. Got it right here, and I probably will not display that simply because Hawk takes seniority for me because I saw Hawk first as a kid. She made more of an impression on me than Delora.
Quickly, though, is there any issues with heads popping on and off? Not that I've seen anybody saying anything, but I just didn't know.
I haven't tried it simply because I had no intentions of swapping heads.
Don't do it. I don't want you to risk anything. I did want to mention one thing because, again, since I didn't have Triclops in person, and a couple people were mentioning, including JSP in the chat room, but I guess just like with customizers, you can heat up with the hair dryer, and I guess eventually then the visor can turn. It's, I guess, paint is underneath that visor that really, like, stuck it almost like glue. So I guess the visor can move, but you got to do some work. So I'd say just leave yours alone. No sense of trying to risk messing anything up. Just leave your Triclops alone.
Yeah, I was actually kind of fine with how he looks anyway. I mean, I you know, John Perryman has sent me an article about how to do that, and I'm like, well, that's cool, and, you know, maybe at some point, but as of right now, I'm pretty content with the square gamma vision he has on display, so.
Okay.
You know, because he's just going to go on display, and he'll be, you know, I don't do a whole lot of maneuvering around. Most of the cast of characters I have on shelf have maintained the same pose for years. I may just move their position in the shot. If you were to take a picture, I've changed position multiple times, but I'll pretty much leave Triclops as is, and Hawk will stay Hawk. Unless okay. I have the good fortune of coming across another one that allows me to put Dolores' head on to have another character, I'm just going to be satisfied with what I've got. All right. You know, someone wanted to, as a nature of goodwill, they decide, hey, you know what, Dollar, I've got an extra Hawk. As a goodwill thing, podcast, defend the podcast, I need it to you to get, put Delora on your shelf or something like that. You know, but, I don't know, can you see her all right, Joe?
Oh, yeah, we can see her fine. Also, Will Ellis 1979, thank you for joining us. But no, yeah, we can see her fine. Yes.
Okay. Next, I'm going to go with the king of the arena. The mighty Lodar here, and this is how I plan on posing with his fists clenched in front of him. This is how he'll be on the shelf. His mace is right here. I kind of feel like it works better without the mace. I've kind of tinkered around with a lot of the poses, so I'm just going to set him right there in front of me as I talk. He stands up a little bit better than Hawk. Another flawless interpretation here. Lodar looks perfect from back to front, from even seeing the spiked cleats on his boots here. I don't know if they show it very well, but that was one of the first things I noticed when I got him. I was like, oh my God, like it's like right out of the mini comic. Like he's got, you know, spiked boots, you know, just makes him that much more imposing looking. You're like, makes you just like, God almighty.
I had no clue that they did that to him. That is pretty awesome. I haven't seen it, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think he's like that in the mini comic. I'll have to.
I would assume he would, because I don't see them adding some insane extra detail that wouldn't have been there. So I bet you if we look closely, he probably does have those spiked cleats. I mean, possibly, but I would think so.
Now that we brought it up, I got the book open right here to actually Slave City, oddly enough.
Yeah, there's got to be one panel where he's knocked back, and you got to see something.
Just like the way Larry Houston drew him, this guy does have spikes or cleats on his boots. So,
okay.
Bravo to the Four Horsemen for making sure they added such a intricate detail.
Yeah.
I mean,
because it's something they didn't have to do. They could have just absolutely copped out and just gave you regular boots and that's it. So them adding that detail shows they were putting some love and, you know, care into each little design.
I think it was safe to say that this was a very in high demand figure and has been for years, even though, you know, you've gotten so many other flagship characters come before. You know, Lodar has always been heavily demanded as one of those characters fans of like, we need Lodar, we need Lodar, just like we got Geldor and things like that. So to finally have him, it's boy, it is a dream come true to finally have, because he's, God, he looks good. The intensity in his face. I love the, I mean, being able to lower his head down a little bit and kind of add a little bit extra intensity, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
And his head cocked down a little bit as if he was like, you know, staring down He-Man or something like that. And of course, I've got his chains as well here. I don't know what I'm going to do with the chains simply because he's going to go on the shelf with Skeletor and the rest of the Evil Warriors and the Snake Men. I don't have much of a use for the chains at the moment because I don't have a diorama set up. It's just like they're all...
Yeah, because I've seen in another group, one of my buddies, I believe it was Luis Coronado, he recreated the mini comic cover from Slave City where he had He-Man binded with the chains and he did a real cool pose. So, yeah, I mean, it's good for when you're taking pictures, doing posing, but otherwise, yeah, the chains would probably just be there as he's displayed on your shelf. Just with the rest.
I would probably take one of my He-Man variants and chain him up to this as if, like, you know, He-Man's a prisoner amongst all the evil warriors and the Council of Evil is how I would lump Lodar in with, like, Batros and Plundar and Count Marzo and Shakoti and Mask and so forth, but and Geldor. But God, he looks cool. I mean, he really, awesome. Really is just absolutely, and the mace looks awesome. I would love to know if Larry Houston is aware that this character has finally been immortalized.
That's he might not be, remember? I didn't even think he knew about Geldor, so that's something we might have to message him just in case. Like, hey, did you know they did Lodar also? So you might like to see that.
Oh, I would love to have Larry back on the podcast, period, just to talk He-Man again with him. You know, since that first interview we did with him, the audio wasn't that great. I would just love to have a reason to have him back on just to ask him more about He-Man and just get his thoughts on what some of his creations finally being, you know, put in plastic, you know.
We'll have to get him back on. We had a blast the one time he was on. Yeah, we'll definitely have to get Larry back on.
Yeah, but right. God, I can't stress this enough. Lodar just looks so cool. I mean, the armor, everything. The spike belt. It's a simplistic design, but God, it looks awesome. You know,
no, that's good.
And dark purple armor.
Well, sometimes the most simplistic sometimes do seem like they are a little more intimidating. Maybe it's just the crazy color choices. Just it just works. Sometimes if there's just a nice design, sometimes too much is, well, exactly that. Too much, and it might take away from the look of a character. But no, he does look great. And also, Adam Gabbard in the chat room, thank you for joining us. So who's next up out of them?
A personal favorite of mine, Quake.
There you go. God, New Adventures get some love, yeah.
Of this character cannot be discussed enough. I mean, from this face alone, I mean, this is the vintage figure just jacked up because what I love about what the Four Horsemen do is, regardless of how much people have to piss and moan about New Adventures, I balk at people who want to say these characters don't look cool and they don't belong, because when you look at this, and this was a character, I mean, I've always had high hopes for, because I just knew that the Four Horsemen could really just make this guy just the ultimate badass from the mutants faction, because of what they've done with Karate, who's my personal favorite, and Flog and Slushhead and Optic. I'm like, God, if they did Quake, man, and Jesus, they would just make him a force to be reckoned with. I mean, I hope you can see him relatively well here. I hope people can. I mean, I'll hold him up a little bit closer. If you just look at the intensity in his face.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, this guy's just ready to just beat the hell out of anybody. I mean, look at how massive the boulder is here. Boulder stick here, which there's another term for it as well, but I don't have that one memorized. But what I was worried about when I took him out of the box is that the boulder splits apart. And I think the original boulder did that.
Yes. Yes, I have mine up there, the original. Yes, it does split.
Because because my Quake, I'm missing his staff and boulder, so I haven't had that for years. So I was like, I think that split apart. And I was worried about that because it doesn't snap together completely. At least mine didn't. But fortunately, the boulder is held together in its staff well enough to where I've been able to pose him since.
Well, if it's based off of basically how the vintage New Adventures figure was, no, the boulder never snapped. It just fitted together and then was like gripped, like you said, with that part there. But yeah, so yours is fine.
Yeah. I mean, it's as I'm looking at the boulder, it's not completely snapped together, but it's the staff helps hold it in place. It's been like this for most of the week, and I really like this pose of him holding the boulder back. But all the details on him, from the seismograph on his chest, all the details on his helmet, his legs, everything. He's just an absolute stunning member of the Mutants faction. And I mean, if people see this, if you haven't been sold on getting more New Adventures figures, especially the villains, by this point, after seeing Quake, then, God, I feel like you've been lobotomized. How
Looks
can
like a
you?
lot went into him. A lot went into Quake, definitely.
There's so many details. I mean, just look at the guy's legs, his armor, the headpiece. I mean, it's God, he's just so awesome looking. I mean, you almost feel like you can't say enough words because you almost feel like they're too simple. Like the words to describe the level of badass about Quake here, I just feel like they're too simplistic. Just to say it's awesome, it looks great. I'm like, that's not enough. But I'm like, God, what other words in English language can I use to describe this level of badass? I mean,
Yeah.
all the four that I received here, and of course last week as well. It's so damn exciting to have Quake in hand finally. I mean, like his fingertips, he's got these long, these red fingernails. Just extra details that, I think on the original Quake figure you could see fingernails, but these are, colored in and everything, add a little extra texture to the character. And I just love his face. I mean, that is an evil warrior. This is someone I can see hanging around Snake Mountain when Skeletor has returned from Primus and fighting in the New Adventures. Guy hanging
Right.
around the mountain. I can't say any of the evil warriors from Clawful, Triclops, Trapjaw, Jitsu, Too Bad are going to see this guy wandering Snake Mountain and question, what the hell are you doing here? I think
Well,
they would love.
that would cause a paradox, though. We can't have that. It'd be like Back to the Future. Quake would come back, he would have sex with one of the females, and then it would create new characters.
Oh, good
It would
God.
just destroy the whole space-time continuum. Oh, I had to do it. My Back to the Future moment. There you go.
They're so smart as if like they're all experts on time travel because they've watched Back to the Future one too many times and somehow have got it in their head, oh, I know how time travel works. Have you done it? Well, no, but I'm like, okay, then
It's
I
real, man. It's real. But well, hit us with Fangar.
cool about that because it ain't real for one thing.
It is. But hit Fangar. We gotta see this long tooth son of a gun.
Yes, now our good friend Axel Jimenez designed this absolute masterpiece here in Fangor to finally get one of these more or new or I guess an original new villain.
And to bolster the ranks of the Snake Men is always great.
Fangor, God, man! Ever since I saw the Axel's design of the character, I just thought, God, man, this is a character. Much like with Gladiator, the Black Wizard, Bandwidth, Red Shadow.
But also, Tyler, it adds to a faction to which, remember, at times people kind of thought the Snake Men weren't really that amazing. So it's good to see them bolster their ranks and show that the Snake Men are a pretty cool faction, and they are. I mean, it's not like Fangor had to be the one to show you, but it helps add to it. He looks fantastic, and it just shows he blends well with the rest of them.
Yeah, and to make him essentially like the blacksmith of the Snake Men. And I mean, just I'll hold him up a little bit closer there for people who have not seen him up close and everything. I mean, the teeth.
Question from me, because I'm clueless. Are there two different heads, or can those fangs come out, or what?
Two different heads. One has got where is oh here it is. Hold it up to you there a little bit there. So that see the fangs are they're protruding out, but not as prominent.
Okay.
So I'm keeping it like this.
You definitely want those suckers, I guess, sinking into you, because especially at that length, you imagine he starts and then boom, sinks it in, you're done.
I've read, like the idea behind the characters is that like he could fire his fangs out of his teeth, and I'm like, or out of his mouth, and I'm like, I like the idea that this is just his way of like killing his victims.
That's what
So
I
if
would
he's
think, yeah.
hammer, he sinks these massive fangs into you, and you're done.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I think about it. I don't think of him as a character that, shoots fangs out of his mouth
Is
to
that
take
supposed
down.
to be his story? They shoot out of his mouth?
Yeah, that the
Ah.
fangs would mouth, yeah.
Oh, I did. I had no clue about that. I was thinking that they just would logically, from what you showed, sink into somebody. But oh, I didn't even know that. Okay.
Yeah, I think that was on the bio, and I think I'd read that somewhere else also that that was part of like his story they had come up with him, and I just like the idea better that he that like any other snake he would bite down on you and essentially paralyze you with poison or something like venom, so to speak. With a name like Fangor, I mean he just looks so. I mean, God, there's. It's this is another simple design, but boy,
Original weapon too? Is his weapon original?
like the sword here, you know, it's this the jagged wavy sword, you know, it's got like a hook in the center there, you know,
Okay.
obviously be meant for decapitating people, like wrapping around someone's neck, maybe even as a means of, you know, intimidation to kind of thrust the sword across their neck and hold them against the wall there with the blade and like lunge right against their neck.
Sure, you take him back to some of the comics like we'd be talking about later. I think he'd fit in pretty well if it would involve kind of death and a lot of viciousness. Yeah, with those weapons and that look.
Yeah, I mean, and he's got his hammer, he's got a screwdriver, and of course his little snake bat creature, which I got over here, which have not been able to successfully perch on his neck or on his shoulder.
Okay.
I've got to figure out how to do that properly, but
So pretty much out of all four of those, do you have a favorite? I know you pretty much love them all, I can tell, but I don't know if you had one, if you had to pick one favorite, if you had one.
probably, man.
You don't have to answer. You know how I always do that where I'll put somebody on the spot, but no, you don't
Well,
have to answer.
like I said, there's levels of intensity. Like, you know, ever since I saw Fangor, I'm like, it would be awesome for them to put him together. You know, not only for me personally, but it would have been awesome for Axel to have, you know, actually, you know, help been responsible for the creation of what is obviously a very memorable character in this mythology now. And quite because I'm such a fan of the villains of New Adventures and the heroes, and to have another addition, which just helps me feel like. Can we keep getting closer to getting, you know,
More.
Liz? Can we get Hoove,
And
you
I
know?
know you love Lodar from the mini comic Slave City, so that's a tough one.
Something is like God is like, just this. I almost feel like this is way over. This is way past it. Lodar, we should have gotten. I felt like 3 or 4 years ago.
Heck, felt like we should have got him when we were a kid with mini comics, him and Geldor.
Geldor both. This should have been a no-brainer. And I hate that Mattel just, you know, they gave. You know, it's awesome they gave Larry such freedom, but they should have looked at them like, you know, God, you know, we should have made this into a figure too.
They would have been perfect figures back then. They would have been, I mean, right there. They came with the comics. They would have had their comic. There's the character. So,
Yeah, and since we have this, we have to get Garn, and I want both versions of Garn. You know, I want the Native American Garn and the African American version of Garn.
Yes,
I will
yes.
say this on the bios the bio for Lodar. I appreciated it. This was pretty cool. Is that they took the story of Tale of Two Cities and Slave City and essentially combined them both and combined elements from both stories into one and linking Lodar with Queen Belina and Draka, the wizard, and kind of linking them all together as him being an ancient being locked underground and he's unleashed by Queen Belina and I believe he's running the arena, which you know which He-Man sees himself, you know, fighting, you know, both versions of Garn. So I thought that was a pretty cool way of, and I would like that's something I would like to see because you know that was an interesting idea that the powers that be behind the bios and they know who they are because I spoke to one of them. I thought that was a fun idea to because I was like. To have Larry Houston responsible for two mini comics that were obviously turned into two episodes, Double-Edged Sword, both comic book and cartoon, and Tale of Two Cities and Slave City, both the same story, two different villains. You know, it was just really cool to see that those two stories were combined into one. And I like the idea of Queen Belina and Lodar working together. And connecting the arena and all of that. It's like, well, now we have to have both versions of Garn.
Yeah,
You know,
well, hopefully that'll happen. I'm sure you know.
I want to thank thank everybody, you know, for who's worked on these classic figures from the visuals, from the Horsemen to everyone at Super Sevens to the men and women who went in and worked on, you know, the everything from the bios and the artwork, everything. We're off to a great start. You know what? It's been a long wait to finally get these in hand. And I am sorry for certain, you know, collectors and fans who've gotten a Hawk that is less than desirable with the paint application. I apologize. I hate that for you. But it, overall, this is a great start for what Super 7, you know. I know they've had multiple delays due to issues with Triclops not looking the way he needs to, and there were issues with Lodar, I think it was his wristbands, or I forgot what it was. It was an issue with Lodar, I remember, along with Triclops. And it was well worth the wait, you know. It really was. Just go and for as a reminder to everybody else, the pre-orders for the next batch of Super 7 Classic Figures, both Collector's Choice and Filmation, will go off sale this May 15th.
Oh, okay.
Last day. So if you still haven't, I've gotten one of them. I've been worrying about the financial part is why I haven't gotten the other one yet.
Did you say May 15th?
March 15th. Excuse me. God.
Okay, I wanted to make sure. I was like, whoa.
No. I'm glad you corrected me. You know, hey, wait, let's do this over. No, it's live, pal.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, shit, Sid messed up.
March 15th is the last day to get your subs for the second batch, which if you have forgotten or you're unaware, consists of Karg, Raptor, Granita, and Dialamog. And the Filmation sub of Manny Faces, Tongue Lasher, Merman, and the Sorceress will go off sale on March. Can we do it again? March 15th is the last day. So, and Super 7.
Something big must be happening. I was going to say something big must be happening in May. I said something big must be happening May 15th that we don't know. No, subconsciously, you're saying it.
Tongue easier than March. I don't know why. I guess May's easier to say than March. So. But I know a lot of people were felt like I'm not going to give Super 7 my money until we see how this first batch is. And well, you know what? They've got my support. Everything that we've received from both subs has been A+ in my book.
All right,
I'm very happy with everything. I'm hoping financially I can make it work and get the other sub that I have not bought yet.
Well, and, like you said, I guess if you can do it, if you can't, I mean, heck, I mean. Things come up. You never know.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I know we like to, you know, we like some of us act like Joe Modern and say, come on, guys, you know, it's only like $100 and some. Like, come on, just
go well, hey,
for a couple of weeks. I mean, come on, guys.
Even me, I unfortunately won't be able to do it. But I'll tell you what, now that you're done talking about those amazing figures, I have two figures. Now, see, if you're like Joe Amato and you got tons of money, you can go to Target. And for $1,
I knew you were going to do that.
Hold on. For $1, you can get this nano metal figure of Ken from Street Fighter. It's 99 cents. They got 12 of the characters from Street Fighter. I was like, that's damn cool for a buck. I mean, just a dollar. And cool even seeing 99 cents up there. But they have 12 of the Street Fighter characters. Then I got one other. I was like, oh, man, this is a cool pose. I still can't believe they can put this much detail in these little figures. Is the Superman one. It's him with a flowing cape. It's like that metal look, 99 cents. And they got a ton of them. I mean, they got a ton of these DC ones, but they also have wrestling ones. And like I was telling Tyler earlier in Beyond Retro, I was like, man, the Ultimate Warrior is part of that, but they didn't have them in stock because that's the only figure besides Macho Man I would have bought. I don't think they had Hulk Hogan because I know Tyler would be like, well, damn, 99 cents. I'll get a little metal Hulk Hogan, but I don't think Hogan was in that. But they had Ultimate Warrior, Macho Man, and then some of the, you know, newer wrestlers too. But, man, you can't beat them. I mean, hell, even for a carded collection, if people want them in on card. But I was like, man, you got a bubble card back and the figure, 99 cents. It's like, this is up Joe Amato's alley. You know, I can afford this kind of stuff. So Tyler had his big four, and I got my little two. It ain't Masters related, but damn it. You know, if you guys go to Target, 99 cents, pick them up, get them.
I will say I came close a couple of times to getting Vega, Balrog, Sagat, and Ryu because those are my favorites.
Oh, you've seen these at the store?
At Walmart.
Oh, they're at Walmart too. Oh, okay, I didn't know if it was a Target exclusive. Oh, well, it's good to know they're everywhere. So,
Months ago, and it's just a habit of not spending money, period. I think because when I saw it was around Christmas time, and I'm in such a bad habit of buying anything for myself unless it's, like these figures, even if it's something He-Man related. Like, I can't justify buying that right now.
yeah,
It's either
some just,
nothing, and
yeah.
that's why I have those, but.
Yeah, when I see some of these things, if it's a cool one, I have to get. Oh, Zentron in the chat room was saying no Chun-Li. It's like, no, they have Chun-Li. Chun-Li's available also, but I think when I went, I just seen Ken, Bison, and Blanca, and they had Blanca. But yeah, but they give you basically the cast of the original, Street Fighter II. I think you can get Ryu, Guile, Zangief, Sagat, Ken, Blanca, E. Honda, Vega, Chun-Li, Dhalsim, Balrog, and M. Bison. So those are the ones that are available. That, well, now that Tyler said, you can get them at Walmart too. But can't beat them. So those are my two finds. And I'll unbox them another time. No sense of having a great unboxing of these live on the show. That would be.
What a show that would be. Wow, look at it. I just set it up right here, and all right, well, guys, any questions, just feel free to say nothing.
Yeah, that would be an epic unboxing. But okay, well, now we'll move into. Oh wait, real quick, Chris Simpson said, "What aisle were they in?" Well, when I was at Target, they were just around all the Pop Funko stuff. It's I don't know. You have your movies, and it seems like they shove all that stuff in the movie section. I don't know how it was at Walmart, but they had movies, and then they had the big Funko section, and this was around Funko stuff.
Yeah, my Target is kind of the same way. And then at Walmart, it's the same aisles where like the Pops are at.
Is it okay?
Kind of where a lot of the adult collector stuff is at, where they've got the loyal subject stuff and the Pops and all the kind of random like pop culture quirky looking figures. They're all kind of lumped together at Walmart.
Okay. All right. Well, there you go on some of the new stuff. But now we have two topics we were going to discuss. And since last week, we discussed part one of the three-part DC miniseries that they had back in the day for Masters. Today we're going to talk about part two. And part two is, what is it, Tyler? I don't know if you had it to show to the.
The Castle Grayskull, and I just now took this out of the frame. I've had most of my He-Man comic books in frames, and I have not had a full chance to actually sit down and read it today because I just got it not maybe an hour and a half ago out of storage. So
It came
I've
with the
got it with
frame.
me, and what's that?
I said it came with the frame.
It came with the frame.
There you go. There you go.
Say, look at that. Joe can quote a movie, and I'm assuming he knows what movie he's quoting. Otherwise, I'd have to punch him in the stomach.
Have to punch myself. But well, what are some of your thoughts on issue two of this? Because as we know, last week it left off, He-Man got one of the talismans. Because if I'm not mistaken, he has to get three talismans to then help them find the location of the power sword. Because Skeletor has the goddess. Basically as a prisoner, and is saying, you better get what I need, otherwise he would probably kill the goddess. So that's at the end of issue one. He got the one talisman from Stratos, which was right around his neck, which will then lead him now to the second talisman, because he's going for one, and then Man-at-Arms, Teela, and Stratos are looking for the other talisman later in the comic.
Yeah, and of course, He-Man runs into an old kind of tribe, which is kind of reminiscent of, obviously this is not a full connection to those original mini comics because we have Prince Adam in this mythology, but it almost feels like it's a brief nod to the idea of He-Man coming from a tribe,
Right.
a barbarian tribe, because he comes across a barbarian tribe when him and Battle Cat are on the hunt,
And he
and
finds
that.
his old buddy Serral.
What's that?
And he finds his old buddy Serral. Is that the guy that he
That's the
comes
guy.
face to face? Yeah, because Battle Cat is clueless of who this guy is, which then, like you said, He-Man's going to tell a story of how he knew of Serral before, Battle Cat. But that you're right. They gave a little nod in a way. It felt like you said, the original mini comics with He-Man coming from a barbaric, tribe. But in this one, like you said, well, He-Man, remember, only appears when he goes into the Cave of Power. But it was Prince Adam basically telling the story of when he was Prince Adam to go out for an adventure or to do battle. And that's when I think he I can't remember how he was bestowed upon the power from the goddess, but that's when he first did it. I don't know if there was a battle going on with Serral, what was happening, if it was in that village where Serral came from, but I know that He-Man got, or Prince Adam got the power to become He-Man from the goddess then. I don't even think he was in the Cave of Power at that time, was he, the first time he got it?
No, trying to find that exact.
Well, the other thing I found interesting while you're looking, what I like. Oh, go ahead.
It's just something that's kind of bequeathed upon him. Like I said, I haven't had a chance to reread this, so everything. Like I said, I really didn't have much time to really flip through it a whole lot, at least to get a lot of details, which is my fault for not getting it out of storage any sooner. So. Joe, forgive me for missing.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Yes, I've had at least enough time to kind of get an idea of to remember what's happening in this comic book.
Yeah, because what so many cool things is...
Thing is true. That's what's going on in here, yes.
Yeah, and the demon that you see, because obviously there'll be some foreshadowing, but they showed that demon that did the attacking on that village, you know, in the past. And was his name... It was Damon or... I think it was Damon, Damon. I might even forget.
Around that part in the book here, I'm trying to.
Oh God, I'd hate to if I screwed up his name because I'm sitting there trying to remember what his name was.
So you and I we're not perfect He-Man fans here. We make mistakes. So I made a mistake earlier already. If you make one, then you know.
Well, if you see his name at some point, you can make sure I thought it was Damon, but either way. What I found interesting was seeing Prince Adam having the axe and the shield. He had it before he even became... because I assumed when he went in the Cave of Power that those were the weapons that he was given. Because remember, when Prince Adam becomes He-Man in the Cave of Power, and of course Cringer becomes Battle Cat all the time, he's never given the Power Sword. The Power Sword is still something that has to be sought out, and that's when the two halves come together, or however it is, when you get the Power Sword, that allows entry into Castle Grayskull, but he never just transforms into He-Man with the Power Sword in the Cave of Power, I don't think.
No, the Power Sword is not featured at all in this book. I mean, which is one of those things that, you know, as a child and for most of my life of being a fan, I mean, to me it's like you can't have He-Man without the Power Sword. I always thought the axe was cool, but to me, the Power Sword was the most prominent weapon. To me, it's the definitive weapon in my own personal life. Like, of all the coolest weapons of sword and sorcery, action, adventure, whatever, He-Man's Power Sword, you know, is the top of the mountain. As I've gotten older, I've appreciated the idea of just He-Man with a shield and battle axe. There's something a little bit more savage about that. Not that... I'm trying to say that this is, you know, what fans say is Savage He-Man, but he just has the battle axe. And the idea of chasing after the two halves of the Power Sword, it changes the story. It changes the dynamic of what everybody's after. It makes Skeletor's quest even more specific as opposed to, I just want Tartar's like, no, I want both halves of the Power Sword to get into Grayskull as opposed to, I just want to get into Grayskull. Like, It's getting the means to an end, so to speak. It makes this fight for the Power Sword that much more meaningful. And it would have been interesting had Filmation incorporated that, which I've often felt because of Black Star's cartoon with the Star Sword and the Power Sword, Filmation was not going to repeat the same storyline in another cartoon, which is probably why that got axed. But I've always found this to be a very fascinating storyline that
you know what's funny? Real quick, I wanted to say one thing to you. It was before you even said that. Grimbot 2 in the chat room, thank you for joining us, said what you said just before you said it, said, changes it, he says, changes it into a Black Star knockoff. So, yeah, I guess you both were along the same line of thinking of, yeah, I guess that's what they would have thought.
Yeah, and it kind of makes you wonder, like, was it all just a happy coincidence? Because when Mattel's coming up with this toy line, kind of spitballing stuff at random, and Filmation had done Black Star the year before. Did someone at Mattel, you know, because they, you know, they'd all, I think they worked with Filmation already because the Filmation done the Flash Gordon cartoon. Mattel had released toys. So you kind of feel like there is a connection with Filmation Mattel already, not just because of He-Man. But did they someone say, that's a pretty interesting idea. I'm gonna take that idea from Black Star and put it into our toy line. You know, it's
yeah, one of those, no.
I never hear anybody talk about. Like, you know, Black Star references show up in the He-Man cartoon. You know, I give James E. Doc credit for pointing that out. But I would love to know, is it all coincidence or was it just an unsolved mystery?
Because, you know, it's funny because we'll lead into one of those, if you will, unsolved mysteries just in a bit after this. Because, no, you're right, in the earlier stories, like I said, from the mini comics to the DC three-parter, you're right, it was always He-Man with his axe, his shield. The power sword was always the other item, whether it was in some stories where it was just one or was the two to become one. But it was like always something that was being attained. And that, like you said, when the cartoon came around, that went away. It's now he just has the sword. You know, you're not seeing the axe in the cartoon. I don't even know if his battle axe made an appearance in Filmation. I know the shield in somewhat with Prince Adam having a gray one, but did that battle axe ever make it?
I think in some promotional artwork, I think He-Man's battle axe, I think, was used maybe once or twice. I may be even wrong on that one. Just promotional artwork, not like nothing in the style guide, nothing. I think like some of the Golden Book puzzles and stuff like that may have incorporated the axe on occasion. Yes,
they did. I even have some, I believe. Hell, I even think it's on my giant one. Let me see. Yeah, on my giant Golden Book puzzle that's hanging on the wall. What's that?
The one with Faker and Orko on the puzzle.
Yes. Well. Yep. That's the one. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one that R.L. Allen drew. It's a beautiful piece, but he has his axe, he has his shield, but that also had a lot of weird things being combined because you would think, oh, that's supposed to be pre-Filmation, but like, not really. He went with a lot of things because you see Filmation Sorceress in that too, in that puzzle. So a lot's going on in that beautiful piece. But I was going to say real quick, Grimbot 2 in the chat room said, by the way, Filmation dropped the two halves at such late moment that if you look closely, you can see that several stock animations of He-Man only have one half. I never knew that. Thanks for saying that. I'll have to check that out. I did not know that. I don't, well, you know me, I've never really looked much deep into all the stuff of the cartoon, but that's a cool thing to know. So, well, thanks for saying that, Grimbot. I appreciate that. I'm trying to see if there's anybody else in the chat room that might have said something. Let me see. Renee Chavez, thank you for joining us. Chat room said, according to Lou Scheimer, it was a coincidence. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on in the chat room, and we do appreciate that. But no, it's interesting because, like I said, in these stories, you never seen the whole "By the power of Grayskull, I have the power." It was always, you know, the Cave of Power where Adam transformed and also Cringer into Battle Cat, which was, you know, pre-Filmation. And like you said, elements of that and other things were used, and eventually, bam, we got the cartoon. But back to this story, He-Man's out looking for another talisman. And of course, with that whole encounter with Sarah, eventually he gets his one half. I'm just talking about half. I was thinking of the power swords. He gets another talisman. After he acquires the talisman, it kind of shoots over to Teela, Man-at-Arms, and Stratos. And they're on a mission to get the next, or actually maybe the last talisman, because there's supposed to be three, but it's deep within the ocean, like in one of this, I know it had a specific name, I'll be honest, I don't know if it was Sea of Darkness, Sea of Blackness, I don't know what it was called, but they had to go down, they had to get into there. Now, they knew it'd be deep, so if I'm not mistaken, Tarek the Wizard, earlier from part one, I think they were able to get these vials from him. He created some magic potion that if they drink, they can go into water and breathe for an hour. So they can actually breathe underwater. So they go deep within this lair, the lair of the mer people, I think they described him as. And of course, you're going to eventually see Merman. And Merman knew they were going to be coming. He knew Skeletor's plot because they were like, hey, you better give us this other talisman. Otherwise, your master is going to know about this. He sent us to come get this. Merman didn't care because Merman's figuring, no, heck, I'm going to use this and maybe I will find the power sword and I'll get into Castle Grayskull. So even it's cool to see Merman. He's all for himself. But then Skeletor sees all and knows all. He sees what's going on. And he tells Merman, you let him go. All your other warriors that are around there, let them, you know, go and get this talisman and get out. So the second Stratos touches it, boom, they're teleported, all three of them, and they're teleported to where they're around with He-Man right now. But they're wondering, where are they at? And of course, that's where our buddy, the Cosmic Enforcer, Zodak, shows up. I love how Zodak was in these early DC. He had quite a role, because remember, he's there just to keep the balance. But he brings them together, and I think there was, like, again, a kind of cliffhanger to where it'll lead into the last one. But this is, it's so good to see, like I said, so many different ways that the story was. You forget about stuff. You really do. You forget that, you know, there was, you know, the Know by the Power of Grayskull. There was this Cave of Power. There's a lot of different elements that I think have gotten lost because maybe a lot of people didn't read these DC mini comics. These DC comics. They might have read the mini comics more, you know, but it's a good piece of Masters history that if you haven't read it, it's something you need to read.
It definitely, had the toy line, had Mattel decided, you know what, we like what DC did for us here, other than just using this as a way of promoting the toy line, which is pretty much this is what this is, and it appears that they really just kind of gave the writers, Paul Cooperberg, yeah, and you got Alfredo Acala as inker, George Tuska as the penciler, and so on and so forth. A little bit of creative freedom to kind of create a story based around the simple idea of the two halves of the power sword. House of Grayskull is the ultimate source of power in the universe. And you've got good guys versus bad guys. Go. It's a fun, simple storyline that would have been really interesting had they continued on. And we're introduced to the rest of the heroes, the rest of the villains, but everyone's still fighting for the two halves of the power sword. You know, I think to have Hordak and King Hiss and the Horde and Snake Man come in and are all fighting for the halves of the Power Sword, and you're introduced to Clamp Champ and Cyclone and Moss Man and Mechanek and Buzzoff as buddies to help, you know, along with it. It just would have made a completely different story as opposed to Skeletor just trying to steal all of Eternia's food or trying to, you know, destroy Buzz Off and his people by having the Tycons eat all their food or something like that. You know, making Skeletor's purpose is just wants this ultimate weapon that's since the key to all the power in the universe, but it's also a sword. You know, it's cool to have heroes and villains fighting over a powerful weapon like this.
Oh, it is. And I have a question that, you know, I'm not quite sure. I know that. Okay, Serpos. When was your first memory of Serpos in the world of Masters of the Universe? You know, at least from memory. When can you remember hearing the name Serpos at all?
Until the 2000X cartoon.
I'm sorry. That's where I
got these comics before that cartoon ever came out, but the name never stuck with me.
Yeah, because that's what's weird is a lot of people.
2000X cartoon when King Hiss is that's his god, so to speak.
Right, because I mean, of course, Serpos could have been completely different, but also just to let fans know, Serpos was referenced and mentioned a few times in this comic by Merman, so you'd wonder how different. And of course, Serpos, that could be just basically, it could in a way you could say, hey, that's a generic enough name to where Serpos might have been used in a lot of just fan fiction or types of, I mean, you know, I mean, fiction in general. I mean, fan fiction, but fiction in general and stories. But I just found it intriguing, like, hey, Merman's saying Serpos quite a bit in this. But, of course, most people, like you said, when they think Serpos, they immediately think MYP cartoon.
Well, yeah, and that's simply because that was an idea that, you know, you could see it as a serpent, like a sea serpent, you know, like a godlike, you know, sea creature, kind of like Loch Ness Monster or something like that, you know, something that you could see the merman referencing is, you know, like when He-Man and Man-Arm say, by the sorceress, you know, thank the sorceress, like, you know, by Serpos, you know, that's their way of, you know, like when we say, oh my God, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, oh, yeah. Right. I see what you mean.
Kind of referencing, you know, what you say in a moments of shock or, you know, and great gratitude and things like that, or in absolute fear, you know. Dear Serpos, what is that, you know?
Right. Just like by Beast Man in the, I believe it was the Superman He-Man comic that came out when he said, Cholo's beard, you know, that's like probably like saying by Crom, you know, it's just, yeah I see exactly what you mean.
Something that they, it's their way of, it's the equivalent of saying, you know, Jesus Christ, you know, my God, or what, even if it's not a reference to a Christian belief, whatever, you know, religion based, or it could be just, you know, just, or just kind of whatever. It could, or to quote Sideshow Bob, buy Lucifer's beard.
No, yeah, I see what you mean.
Just that. It's not necessarily, you know, saying it's you're referencing something that you worship in a religious belief. It's just saying, you know, it's a meaning of saying shock. You can't believe it's happening. So you quote higher power, so to speak. So
no, absolutely, absolutely. So
whatever the case may be.
No, absolutely. But also want to say hello to Sledge in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. And quickly to Adam Gabbert in the chat room. No, I don't have any classics figures. I just don't have the money for them. I can't buy figures anymore unless I get 99 cents one. So there you go, Adam. But okay. Well, that's basically issue two of the DC Comics. Sorry, of the second part of three-part miniseries. And next week, we'll discuss the last part of that series. But now, Tyler was talking about something that, like you said, we could do for a lot of things. He was like, you know, a version of, like, Unsolved Mysteries, but for Masters of the Universe. And I figured, you know what? Hell, how about the first one be the Cave of Power that's being in all the, you know, the DC comics from the first part, three-part miniseries, to the He-Man, Superman comic, to that bonus comic that was in a lot of, like, I don't know if it was the November issue of many of them, but there's always this Cave of Power that Prince Adam goes into to turn into He-Man. And I was, what is this cave? Like, is it an extension of Castle Grayskull? Is it something completely different? Because, as you know, the main thing that we've always been used to is seeing Prince Adam say, by the power of Grayskull, and he has the power. And it's like all revolves around Castle Grayskull giving him the power and that being the place of the power. But in these early ones, Castle Grayskull is the place that Skeletor wants to get into by getting the sword so he can have all the power of the universe to control, you know, well, Eternia and be the ruler. But what is it about this cave? Why is it? I just wondered, well, how did it come to be? Because it's completely ignored. You don't hear of it anymore. It doesn't pop up in the cartoons. You don't see it in the mini comics. But it's an interesting idea, but also what is this Cave of Power? Did somebody from Grayskull make this special little cave and whoever goes in it gets it? Or is it just when He-Man or Adam goes in there, it was destined? Go ahead, Tyler, because it's interesting. What the hell is this Cave of Power?
You completely botched my entire opening to this here.
You do your opening like you want. You're fine. Go ahead. Did not just flash that light. They did not just do that. That was something else. I like that. Okay.
I was hoping to introduce a segment with the creepy ass music, and Joe just kept going on and on. I'm like, okay, maybe I'll stop now, and I kick the music in, and then Joe's just like,
still doing? Go ahead. You're still doing it?
Up here, I'm like, Joe, you completely botched my entire introduction to this segment. So, I don't have a trench coat, and I don't have a fog machine with me here, so we're just gonna have to go along. So I just have to blame Joe. This is what happens when you do things live. It just, things just don't go as planned here, much like an Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh my God, now that's it. He's left. He just disappeared. As it, Tyler's vanished just like the Cave of Power, never to return, unless he actually was going off screen to go grab a trench coat and some glasses. I'm not quite sure.
The thought it crossed my mind of putting on some sort of coat and sunglasses or something like that. But you know what? I would probably knocked over everything, and I'd have been like, you know, the dad on Christmas Story, you know, oh, there's sons of bitches, bumpuses, and knocking stuff over all over.
Right.
So, well, now that, you know, I've got my botched opening here, because Joe just insisted on stealing my thunder.
Say that two more times and then say Thundercats help, but go ahead.
All right. Yes, our first Unsolved Mystery, and in people like this, we'll do this more frequently because God knows there's an endless supply of mysterious ideas, theories, and characters that just have come and gone, and no explanation as to what happened to them. And the Cave of Power is a good example of that. This idea that He-Man or Adam and Cringer have to run to this particular cave to become He-Man, and it's an interesting idea. But obviously, from a storytelling standpoint, it's not as practical, you know, to that anytime there's a sense of danger. I mean, Cringer and Adam always have got to run to this cave to transform. And as you see in the first issue of the miniseries, when they come out of the cave, Skeletor's there. Now, I know that's just to kind of get the story up and going, but it kind of is like there's that possibility that you could see them run into this cave, and then out comes He-Man and Skeletor. I mean, He-Man and Battlecat, excuse me. Which I was like, when I was rereading them, like, God, man, that could have easily gone really bad, really fast, you know, with Skeletor. Like, oh my God, I just watched the Prince walk in and out comes He-Man, you know. But it's a really cool idea that just kind of up and disappeared. And it's only in these first few early stories, you know. I don't even recall if it's mentioned in Michael Halperin's Bible for the Filmation cartoon.
That might have been, maybe that was one of the things that they figured they'd scratch, because like you said, that'd be quite difficult if Prince Adam is trapped somewhere super far away from the Cave of Power. It's like, how are you going to even turn into He-Man then? You can't get to the Cave of Power. So maybe they just immediately axed the idea, said, nope, we got to think of a different way. Let's have him have the sword, call upon the power. It'll be easier. He can do it anywhere. You know, it makes more sense for that.
Plus, you know, wanting to know, like, what makes this cave so powerful? Why is this cave in particular that it's just called the Cave of Power? There aren't any kind of, we're not given, but not to say this is a bad thing, because I like having a lot of open-ended ideas in He-Man. I don't like having everything explained to me. But it also kind of takes away a source of power from Castle Grayskull. Whereas Castle Grayskull is all fans know that that's what everybody's fighting to protect or to gain access to, take over, preserve the power, or abuse it. Take your pick of which side that you're supporting there. But having the Cave of Power takes away a great prominent part of what makes that castle so important, is that that's where He-Man gets his power from. And, you know, that's taken away if you go along with this Cave of Power idea, whereas, okay, we're not given any idea what makes Castle Grayskull that kind of epic scale level of importance, because He-Man's power doesn't come from that castle. It comes from this cave. Okay, well, why wouldn't this cave be almost as important as Castle Grayskull? If this cave can turn He-Man or Adam into He-Man, can it do it for anybody else? Can it... Not turn them into He-Man, but can it be power obtained by another source, good or evil? You know, is it strictly, you know, something that's only a chosen one is given? You know, it's just kind of one of those things. It's an ambiguous idea, but it's what makes it kind of interesting is that it just kind of ups and disappears from the mythology altogether. I think it would be cool if it was used in the mythology to a certain extent, but not let it be Adam's source of the power. Because like Joe said, you know, it kind of puts the writers into a kind of a box that they can't really get out of. You can't put He-Man or Adam in peril much if you know you've got to write him out of this scene, run across the planet to get to the Cave of Power,
yeah,
and run across back. The idea of the transformation with the power source makes storytelling a lot more convenient, even no matter how hard a story that you write, you can get Adam out of trouble as long as he's got that power source, no matter where he is on the planet or in the universe for that matter.
Yeah, because in these comics, it almost in a way felt like, you know, to me, I know it wasn't, but, you know, when he would say, okay, Cringer, we got to go to the Cave of Power, I always felt like it was in their backyard or something. Okay, let's just go run around the block, bam, you're there. They just made it always seem so convenient. But, no, it's like you said, it's a lost idea. It's something that was very interesting in these comics. I enjoy it. I could probably see why they didn't use it, you know, further on, but... You know, in some reference, it's like what Grimbot said in the chat room, said pretty much, or Filmation pretty much combined Cave of Power with Grayskull, hence the cave-like interior, which that could also make sense as well in the cartoon. But yeah, it's like they figured, let's just take it all. Let's give the place where Adam becomes He-Man, gets all this power, let's shove it in Castle Grayskull and make Castle Grayskull be the definitive source of all power in this universe, or in this planet of Eternia, which makes sense. Not only does it give He-Man his power, but this is the place that holds all the mysteries and secrets and all the other powers of the universe that Skeletor wants. And if he can get, he can control everything. So it's, I can see, like I said, how they separate. It's a shame that, like I said, this idea went away and was never shown again, because I could figure, hey, why didn't at least, you know, mini-comics? How many times did in some of the mini-comics they have just quick little pop-up references to something else? And it could have been interesting to maybe see an appearance and maybe in a different form. Maybe it did something else. I don't know, but a shame it went away like that. Also, I want to say hello to Delva78 in the chat room. Thank you for joining us. But yeah, the Cape of Power. This is one of, like Tyler said, many mysteries that will definitely continue every now and then on the show, because there's other things that have been there and gone, and you've always wondered what happened.
That or stuff that we were kind of introduced to, and it was just dropped immediately, like a bad wrestling gimmick. But it was a wrestling gimmick that we were interested in, and Vince McMahon decides, I hate it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of good stuff and a lot of bad stuff, and that's what makes this property so intriguing, is that there are so many unsolved mysteries about, because let's say hypothetically, okay, well, what did happen to the Cave of Power? If someone wanted to incorporate all of these elements, but the Cave of Power is no longer in use, it's the Power Sword, is the Cave of Power, much like the Goddess, self-implode and destroyed itself? Because the Goddess character is essentially written out and becomes the Sorceress, you know, and you had Teela, but the Goddess is essentially the Sorceress, but she's not they're not the same character, but it's kind of one of those things where the Cave of Power and the Goddess, I kind of linked them two together. Because there were original ideas of Grayskull and the Sorceress that become, you know, Grayskull's purpose becomes a little bit more significant with the source of the Power Sword, and the Goddess is kind of written out to make room for the Sorceress. So for those characters, obviously, yes, it's an evolution. We know that. But from a hypothetical standpoint, theorizing, you know, does the Goddess just kind of get mad one day because she realizes there's a higher power out there, walks into the Cave of Power, just decides to commit, you know, suicide, just has the cave, you know, crash and implode on her, you know?
I was going to say, there was one thing about issue two of that series that I forgot to mention that I liked hearing. I liked how Merman was proud when he was proclaiming, this is my world. Like, this is where I came from, when he was trying to explain himself and compare to Skeletor. He says, a Skeletor is from somewhere else in the multiverse or multi-universe. So I even like how he explained that Skeletor is not from Eternia in that issue, but he's proud. Merman is proud to say, this is my home world. So I just thought I would shoot that out there. That was, yeah.
It's nice because it's fun to see Merman be so dominant, because I would like to think in any new canons or media that Merman would be portrayed as a very formidable character, not just someone that's Skeletor snaps his fingers and he's there at his beck and call and he can be smacked around so easily. I'd like to see Merman be portrayed as someone who's Skeletor is very proud to have on his side. You know, and that he will fight for Skeletor, but this is the man who rules the waters. I mean, that's how he's presented, as the evil version of Aquaman / Namor the Submariner of the seas of Eternia. Not someone to be taken lightly. You know, yeah. That's why I hate it when people want to slam characters like Aquaman and Namor. I'm like, okay, most of this planet is made up of water, and you're going to make fun of the guy that's in absolute control of the life and everything that goes on underwater. You know, it's one of the most dangerous places on the planet. We want to somehow label those guys as like the lamest characters. But Merman certainly is not that at all. And it's really, really cool to see him displayed as a very, a character that's taken seriously. That's someone that should be feared, because you are in his domain. This is the guy that runs the show underwater.
Yeah, and not like, well, we've said it before, sometimes they unfortunately got the bumbling thing later in the cartoons and stuff, but no, I mean, he's He's a frightening looking sea creature. He's somebody you definitely wouldn't want to come in contact with, along with all his mer people who are on these crazy, like, underwater sea creatures that they use as almost steeds. And just, oh, Grimbat in the chat room said, wasn't Goddess called Sorceress in the DC miniseries? No, it was, she was called the Goddess, but I see what you mean. There was times that within the early comics and mini comics, sometimes you'd hear Goddess, Sorceress, sometimes you heard it both. I mean, it's enough to make your head explode. It's like even thinking. What's strange and unique, as crazy as the story was when we discussed it the one time, which it still wasn't bad, but the one story with the masquerade ball faker that we discussed from the sticker comic, which or sticker book, which was an entire story. It wasn't parts where it was color this, then a story. It was all a story. That person who did that, he was using a lot of cannons because what he did was he drew the Filmation Sorceress, as we know how she looks, but also drew Filmation Zoar and made them separate characters. Not like how the goddess looking like Teela in the early comics could also have Zoar the Falcon as separate. No, he took basically the look of Filmation Sorceress and Filmation Zoar and put them in the same story, but separate characters. So the sorceress did not become Zoar in this story. So some of these are so crazy, but it's still it just makes it fun just to see some of these different stories that were used in different types of media back then.
Plus, you know, when you look at things of seeing Zodak and various forms of media, like in the puzzles and storybooks and promotional artwork, where you see Zodak alongside Skeletor, the first mini comic, you see Stratos alongside with Skeletor. Just one of those things where, you know, it's important to emphasize that not even Mattel knew what they were doing with this. They had no idea who was good, who was bad, whose side was on whose side, that you're constantly seeing these changes in the first, at least the first year, maybe even the second year, you might see a couple of tweaks here and there. But it was really, that's what makes it so interesting, is that you come across so many old things from the first couple of years of He-Man, especially that first year.
I'm going to try to get this without a glare because you're right. That's something I think fans could. Oh, my light's going to hit the shit. I mean, hit this bad. Ah, crap. I'm going to try to go at an angle. But this is the giant Golden Book puzzle. I mean, the giant puzzle from Golden. And as you can see in this, you do see Faker. Faker's swatting away at Orko. But also, like you said, you have Filmation Sorceress. You have Manyface is shooting down at Zodak over there. There's so much insane, and there's He-Man with just the battle axe and the shield. But like you said, there's so many insane things going on that when the person drew this, I mean, he's definitely drawn a lot of cannons into one. So I didn't know if you could, is that at all visible to good, Tyler, or no?
I mean, of course, I'm very familiar with that puzzle anyway, so
Okay,
I.
it's a beautiful piece. This is something that if anybody buy it and frame it. It's amazing. But yeah, I just had to show it because I figured a lot of people were wondering what in God's name are you guys talking about all the time? So that's why I wanted to share that real quick.
Yeah, and that, what was, I had a particular thought I was going to share too in regards to that about the constant flip-flopping and oh. That, you know, and just I mentioned this before on the podcast too, but Paul was asked when he was working on the He-Man cartoon series and asked the Mattel reps, you know, okay, well, who's what, who's who? And the Mattel reps said, well, we really don't know. So when you got Filmation staff working on these stories and they're asking, well, who's the good guys, who are the bad guys, and Mattel saying, well, we haven't quite figured that out yet. It just shows you that, you know what, that's what makes this thing so much fun, is that it was, I mean, it took a while for it to find its footing and establish who's good, who's bad, who's fighting for what, and we until we get the main storyline of He-Man and the Power Sword is always trying to protect Grayskull from Skeletor and other outsiders, and that's it. Whereas this was constantly changing from the Cave of Power to the Goddess to the Sorceress to just He-Man, then having an alter ego, and you know, it just.
Yeah, a lot goes on. Like I said, it's great. It's great to just go back and look at a lot of the history of the stuff of this. I mean, not just like we said, just from the comic books, mini comics and things, but jump into some of those coloring book stories, the sticker book stories, even the puzzles themselves will tell a story and something interesting. You can create your own little, use your imagination to imagine what could be going on and what happened in this. But well, those are those. Now I was going to say, before we wrap it up, because Tyler can, we'll have a couple more things to say, but in the chat room right now, we can open up to you guys. You know, we'll answer some of your questions. If you have any questions at all you want to ask, whether it's something about the cartoons, the comics, the toys, memories, anything, if you want, go ahead, shoot us a couple questions. We'll answer those before we wrap it up. But yeah, we were still just going to discuss a couple things before you do that. But go ahead, Tyler.
No, I'm good on our first Unsolved Mystery, and I've emphasized to fans currently listening to us now or somewhere down the road, if you like this idea, shoot us a couple of suggestions, because you know God knows there's plenty of them out there. If there's an unsolved mystery you would love for us to discuss, we'll discuss it on here. I'll do the intro properly, and hopefully Joe won't botch that one for me. And
Is this our version of Botchamania? Sorry.
Yeah. Joe's my
No,
botchman.
it worked. It worked though. Well, real quick, okay. Delvis78 in the chat room said he always treated his figures. Well, hey, what's weird? Always treated his figures like pro wrestlers. He-Man was a baby face, Skeletor was the heel, and everyone else was gray area. So we always like that. We love the combination of wrestling masters. Yeah, because we're big wrestling fans too. But okay, Adam Gabbert in the chat room said, Tyler, what is your favorite Masters of the Universe Classic figure for male and female out of all your figures, if you had to choose one of each?
Female, probably have to go with Huntara, and then male, God, just having to ch choose like one definitive male between heroes and villains. I'm really happy with Cyclone. I really like Cyclone a lot, and then I'm gonna throw in a villain just for the sake of it. Probably Too Bad.
Okay. God, I used to love Too Bad like crazy. Yeah, that was a fun, especially vintage style. Loved them. But all right,
Dude,
well,
my favorite evil warrior, period. So,
oh, cool. All right, well, thank you, Adam, for that. Zentron has a question. Between He-Man and She-Ra in the animated series, who would you say was most violent character? Well, as for me, well, when watching She-Ra, since it seemed like she would encounter a lot of horde troopers quite often, you know, probably more than He-Man knocking around those hoverbots, robot knights in, you know, Masters of the Universe, it seemed like She-Ra got time to show to be more violent, I think. You know, even though we know,
I would argue that. I would
well,
argue
it
that.
seemed like she'd have more time to shine with doing some of the stuff like that compared to, you know, if maybe like how the later seasons of He-Man got a little more sugar-coated and She was sugar-coated, you wonder what would they both have been like if they didn't get attacked by the parents and all the groups to lighten up the show. But I don't know. At times it seemed like she got to, at least for me, it seemed like she was doing a lot more smashing. But I know He-Man done his share too, but I don't know. It's a tricky one. But I'd say She was just from a lot of things I remembered like that, maybe.
No, I say He-Man because, there's been several occasions where He-Man would actually put his hands on, Merman, Beastman, Triclops, Trapjaw, Clawful, where he is engaged in physical combat with them. Like he has punched Clawful, he's knocked the hell out of Triclops. He's taken Trapjaw's, laser cannon, bent it up, put him on his war sled and threw him. Merman's attacked him with the sword multiple times. He grabs him and throws him away. Beastman, on multiple occasions, has attacked He-Man, and He-Man will either just, like in Colossal Awakes, cuts the whip, and while Beastman sits there stunned, he picks Beastman up, grabs it, and just throws him. And also in Diamond Red Disappearance, when Beastman leaps at him, and He-Man just grabs a hold of him and just throws him off to the side. So, to actually see He-Man grabbing a hold of, or even when, so I think it's Song of Solace, when Skeletor's trying to get away, and He-Man grabs a hold of him, takes his arm and puts it behind his back. He's got him in his arm lock. And Skeletor, tells him to let him go.
You put him in
Just
a reverse chicken wing.
He's got a Bob Backlund finisher there.
Exactly. He goes to the ground and everything, and he's choking him. Then he's looking at his hands, like, why, He-Man? Why? But all right. Well, thanks for that.
I think He-Man has been a little bit more hands-on and as a means of physical combat. She-Ra does an awful lot of kicking and destroying horde troopers. I know she's thrown leech before and things like that too. But I just He-Man engaging in physical combat. It's not the what we had hoped with clashing of swords and stuff like that. But he has, knocked away, villains on multiple occasions.
No, I understand what you mean. I'd probably let She-Ra kick the crap out of me anyways. That'd be fun. But, all right. Well, thanks for that.
Hey.
All right. Christopher Dahlberg in the chat room said, do you think we can petition Dark Horse Comics or some other company to continue in the Alcala vein of He-Man? Even a continuation of the original DC Comics stories would be great. It's something I'd always love to see. I'll be honest with petitions. You know, I don't know how well some of these things work. You know, I mean, fans, they usually have their voices, be quite vocal with a lot of things, polls and everything. But I don't know how much that could affect any type of thing of any comic company listening to possibly what fans would want. Because they usually want to try their own twist on a given, property. And, it'd be nice. I would love to see something like that. It'd be interesting because I love that, look and style and maybe even story-wise. But I don't know if they'd ever go back to that, honestly. But, Tyler, your thoughts? I just don't know.
I think it would be in better hands if Dark Horse was doing it because, DC tends to piss away a lot of stuff for the most part. At least recently. And I just feel like, DC's just not that interested in He-Man. Period. They don't consider it a very viable property for them to have in their library of characters, which that's fine. Superman, Batman, the rest of the Justice League, heroes and villains, that's the bread and butter. He-Man is not, and hasn't been for quite some time. I think it being in the hands of Dark Horse does business with DC, on occasion, things like that. So I think it would be better in the hands of Dark Horse, but also Dark Horse has got to be willing to commit that, this is a property that, and I think they know, given all the releases that they've done with all the hardcover books and things like that, that they know there's a demand for He-Man, that the He-Man fans are very passionate. Yes, every fan's idea of what the proper interpretation of He-Man changes from every guy to girl to girl to girl, whatever the case may be. Everybody's got their own idea. I'm sure my interpretation of He-Man varies greatly than what Joe would desire and everybody listening and people who've never even heard of us. Everybody's got the same idea. It's just kind of taking what the most well-known parts of what everyone's, quite well, established with. And the Alcala, yes, it's a popular look. And I'm sure if they hired, popular artists, Axel does a great job of, he's a big fan of that. I know Kevin Sharp would do a great job with it as well. Capturing that same look of Skeletor and having He-Man with just the battle axe and fighting with the two out of the
I'm sorry. Grimbot in the chat room made a little post, when we're talking about who's the most violent. He said, don't forget the cameraman. How many times He-Man punched him? Yeah, I guess He-Man could be quite violent with the amount of times he's hit the poor camera guy. All right, we got to get a good shot here. Bam! But, all right, well, it was Delvis78 in the chat room said, who is either of your most underestimated characters? Well, I don't know. I don't know if you're meaning by...
There's entirely too many.
Oh, there is. That's what I mean. Especially if we think about the toys and action figures, the ones that get joked upon as being, worthless, stupid, shouldn't have made him, whatever.
My hero would be Clamp Champ, and my villain would be Stinkor. You've got Chemical Warfare and Stinkor, and Clamp Champ, to me, a guy who's got heightened senses and looks like the Carl Weathers equivalent of He-Man, and yet the character is so easily dismissed because... you don't see heightened senses in a contraption that can grab a hold of anybody, size-wise or whatever, and the guy can pick them up with his right arm and hold
and
them.
And that's what's funny.
It's a contraption that prevents them from walking away.
Yeah.
And I think the guy on hand-to-hand would be like, the equivalent of taking on Fisto. You know, I hold Planchet Mephisto as being the next in line as the most powerful man in the universe, next to He-Man. And Planchet is always overlooked. Always. Everybody's like, what does this guy can do? You know, it's...
And that's what's funny is there was two that I was going to say. I actually had three, but two of the heroes, I was going to mention Planchet as well, just because when you think about in the mini-comics, when he's going to be getting hit by an arrow and out of nowhere, Planchet catches it like nothing when Ninja are trying to hit him with that arrow. You know, in the search for Keldor. He catches that and snaps it like nothing. It's like, this guy, I mean, he's a badass fighter. He's got, like you said, the clamp that can, you know, help engage in battle and tossing people around. But also, he's got basically, Spidey senses. I mean, this guy's got some amazing senses. And when you're fighting somebody like that that could possibly anticipate your moves, and he's a skilled fighter, you're in for some trouble. So the Clampchamp would be one of mine. Also, I hate that Extendar gets the nut punch of Masters. Like, he's a goofy guy. He extends. I'm like, but did you see his gimmicks? Do you understand about his power? About how when he calls upon I Am Extendar, the Tower of Power, and he becomes gigantic and becomes super strong, almost along, like you said, being next to He-Man, one of the strongest people in that universe as for a hero. It's like, I would be frightened to fight this big, buff, gigantic knight that gets even bigger and even stronger when he calls upon that phrase. So those two for me, yes, are two heroes that are quite underestimated, along with others like, well, Ninjor. I mean, Ninjor, just they always say, what's a ninja doing in Masters? But a ninja that stealth can hide in the shadows with upping the power of Masters, all his arsenal of weapons he has. I mean, he's like he's all kind of like a one-man army in himself with everything he has. I would hate to fight somebody that could be just in the shadows. You don't know when they're coming. You don't know when you're going to get hit. So, yeah, those are some underestimated. So, yeah, thanks for that question, Delta 78. We really appreciate that. And let me see if there was Chris Simpson just said, on a scale of 10 to 10, this is him. He's just boasting about a character. He said, on a scale of 10 to 10, how glorious and great is the one true god, Clawful? Oh, yeah, we love some Clawful from the toys to the cartoon.
15 on that scale.
Yeah, from the cartoon to the toys. It's like...
Go to the Clash of Arms, man. That's why Clawful is the badass that he... Oh, and that's the only way Clawful should be depicted.
He was portrayed great. I mean, even more so, like you said, when you see Whiplash, though, because like I said, Whiplash was going to kill Fisto. Whiplash was taking it to Fisto in Clash of Arms. If you guys have never read it, read Clash of Arms. This is a time for not only Fisto to shine, but a lot of the villains, because this isn't He-Man's time to shine. He-Man doesn't show up to the end of that comic carrying a gun out of all things. He doesn't even have his sword. So you want to see some cool fighting and action-packed? Yeah, get Clash of Arms. Definitely read that.
Yeah, that's one of those things, you know. I know we've discussed it multiple times. Ranked it, you know, as like the greatest piece of American literature ever read. Hell, I wouldn't mind going back and revisiting that mini comic with you just for the hell of it, you know, just to constantly keep people's minds reminded about why that's such a great mini comic.
Yes, no, it is. I would love to revisit Clash of Arms. It is one, and you know what's funny? How about this? You didn't ask, or they didn't ask about underestimated. Talk about an underestimated mini comic is Clash of Arms. Everybody wants to quote all the original Alcala ones, some of the Mark Texera ones. You know, those are the ones that seem like they get, you know, the biggest focus.
They don't hold a candle to Clash of Arms.
No, that's what I mean. Clash of Arms it's a great story.
That and Hordak's mini comic. I'm like, what? That's a discussion in itself. Why is it when people mention mini comics, it's just those first 2 years, and that's pretty much it? Yes, you know people can remember certain ones. Oh, I like that one too. But that consensus, that mass consensus, is strictly the first four mini comics / storybooks and the ones that were done by Mark Texera. They're all great. Don't get me wrong, but it's you know, I felt like Larry Houston's run on the mini comics, he was attached to a lot of great stories, a lot of fun. And that Clash of Arms, man, my God. That Hordak mini comic, when you've got three factions all duking it out in front of Castle Grayskull, and then they turn on each other. You know, why aren't people celebrating that story? You know, there's just so many that just, like Joe says, get overlooked. Clash of Arms is probably numero uno on that list of overlooked mini comics.
Yep, and after you read it, and
everybody's heard it.
Familiar with it. And that's what I mean. After you guys read it and you see everything that's going on, you'll think, how did I never read this and why was it so overlooked? So, yes, read Clash of Arms, which, yes, we will revisit sometime. Now, one more about one more question from Zentribe before we wrap it up, because we're gonna have to wrap it up here quick. He said, what did you think of the depiction of Clawful in 2000X series? Well, for me, I loved his look. He was a huge son of a gun. He looked vicious, but they had to do that dumb oaf him up like that. Gee, George, they made him talk. I was like, why? Why did he have to become an oaf? Why did you have to do that? Why couldn't you have him either, well, one, be a mute, or if he wasn't a mute, sound vicious and look and sound as vicious as you look? Because he looked wicked. It was a great redesign, but the character depiction of his, how he talks and how he acts, that was the thumbs down. Look, thumbs up. The way he thinks, thumbs down. Couldn't stand it.
I mean, I remember when me and my brother watched the premiere episode of the beginning, and him and Whiplash are working on that contraption that works on cordite, and he goes, it's not working. My brother laughed because he was like, what the hell is this? And I just sat there like, oh God.
Yeah.
So one of those things where you felt like, okay, maybe if he just doesn't talk at all, maybe because the promotional images, and you see it briefly in the one of the teaser trailers. They're like, "Oh my God, that's Clawful! Clawful's going to be one of the characters, that were shown immediately in the very beginning of the cartoon.
Yeah.
You're not going to be introduced now. He's one of the big. This was great big news, and it was just like, well, we got to make some of these warriors idiots so kids will laugh and think it's funny when they
They
sound
should
like
have did it.
a. And then
Yeah.
decide to take Whiplash and Clawful and make them into the biggest, idiots because they're the brutes of the evil warriors, so therefore they speak like morons.
Yeah, if you're a brute, you have no brain, apparently. And it's, oh, yeah, that was sad. That was sad, but
It was
yeah.
sacrilege. It was a big sin to waste Clawful the way they did.
Yes, no, it was. I loved his look. Loved his look, but I hated the way he talked. But and Zen Brown, I didn't know if I acknowledged you, man. Hello in the chat room if I didn't. You know, we got going there for a bit, so I acknowledge you there just in case. But okay, well, that pretty much kind of wraps it up. But Tyler will have some closing things he'll say, and then I'll do my closing remarks as well.
Don't forget the Super 7 subs will be finalized on March 15th.
Yes.
Check out HEMA.org and go to the forums. Don't forget PowerCon's coming up in this coming August. If you're interested in going to that, you have to get your tickets and things for that. Let's see, check out Axel Jimenez's artwork. Check out Kevin Sharp's artwork. Both of those gentlemen are available on Facebook. Joe Amato's Customs, check that out. Just trying to think if there's anything else I could recommend. You know what, people, with warmer weather approaching, we're gonna start hitting the gym. I can't emphasize enough. Bring some He-Man cartoons in as some motivation, or use He-Man as a motivation to get your butt in the gym. If you're one of those that is like, oh, I'd like to get in shape, I don't have enough motivation. Let me tell you, the He-Man cartoon, the He-Man movie, or just He-Man in general, can really light a fire under your ass. So like getting you in gear. There's nothing more exhilarating in the gym than having the He-Man transformation sequence blasting through both your ears. It makes you almost invincible when you're like lifting weights in the gym. So, just a recommendation that you want to get ready for, the summer season, things like that, going to the beach with your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, significant other, whatever the case may be, want to get in shape. Use the power of Grayskull as your major ass kicker in the gym there, man. And
There you
it's
go.
It makes a big difference. Let me tell you, I've been using He-Man as motivation in the gym for years.
Which is why Tyler knows so much. You can look at him, you can tell this some bitch has been listening to He-Man for years. It's motivation.
Wait, so let's listen to the movie and Skeletor's big epic speech at the end of the He-Man movie blasting in my ears. It's almost like the envisioning yourself as He-Man and Skeletor's taunting makes you just want to lift those weights even harder. It's
And
just
you
like,
guys
oh.
wonder why he knows so much, he can absorb it. But all right. Well, no, as for me now, before I do my regular, closing things, I said I was going to try to acknowledge some of the face groups out there or Facebook groups out there. Now, I want to feel bad because I'm trying to do this from memory. I'm probably going to forget a couple. If I do, I apologize. I'll try to get you in the next one. So if I miss it, you guys can always message me and say, Joe, damn it, you didn't say my group. So I'm just trying to say you can go to the slime pit, the toy lounge, enjoy the toy. Motu Evolution, Motu Nation, the Motu Man Cave as well. It's a select group, but I had to give a shout out to my buddy and his group. It's a great group, the Motu Man Cave. Lucky Legends, Collectors of the Universe is another page. Masters and Mythos, and these are the ones that just popped in my head right now. So I know I probably forgot some. Oh, sorry.
Scareglow Facebook page.
That's it. Thank you. I meant to say Scareglow's house. Thank you. I just said that to somebody earlier. I was saying, yeah, I'm probably going to mention something about Scareglow's house, but I'm going to shorten it up so I didn't say everything about Scareglow's house and this and this and this, because if you search on Facebook and say Scareglow's house, you'll find it. Thank you for saying that, because it went over my head. And those are the ones that mainly immediately popped into my head. If I forget some, I'll get you next time. And, Descendants of Grayskull, Jesus, the great unboxing. Oh, thanks, guys, for helping me out. Yeah, like I said, I feel like a horrible person if I forget somebody, because I'm not trying to ever forget somebody. Zentron says, Shadow Weaver's Realm. So everybody's mentioning it. Okay, well, now let me say mine before I go and forget what the hell I always say at the end, and I'll get any next week. Go to fansofpower.com, go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man is Your Ultimate Fan Group. All great places, all great people. Wait, and before I say until next time, I also want to say thank you everybody in the chat room for joining us. It was a blast having you. Loved the interaction, loved your questions. Kimmy Craft, thanks for joining us. Yeah, we're just closing it up, but you can catch us on a replay. So thanks for joining us late, Kimmy Craft. I was just getting ready to say the last thing. So again, hope to see you guys here all next week. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Jose Canseco Bat, tell me you didn't pay money for this.
Oh boy. Oh my gosh. I don't know. I'm waiting to see if somebody in the chat room gets it. Okay, guys, let's see.
That's what you're doing. You're going to sit there kind of...
Oh, no, I'm not cheating. I want to see if somebody knows it. Okay, guys, I failed. Does anybody in the chat room know this? I want to see it pop up. I'm sure somebody's going to... JSP said Major League? That means no. Okay, hold on. Wait. There might be another's. Adam Gabbert said Raphael. Was that said in one of the Turtle movies?
Yes.
Oh, really? Well, good job, Adam Gabbert. He
got it right. Yeah, it was from Raph and his confrontation with Casey Jones in the first Turtles film.
Okay, cool. All right. Good job, Adam Gabbert. You got it. So everyone is better than Joe and Colt. So, all right, guys. Oh, Chris Simpson, the last thing, said Sandlot. Nope, not Sandlot.
At least everyone's courting baseball. Oddly enough, this is not a baseball movie. Everyone's thinking baseball movies. So.
Yeah, but Adam got it. Good job, Adam. So, thanks again. See you guys next week.
Later.